Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Nursing homes needed to have, and I quote, the ability to care for patients coming from an acute hospital setting, unquote. That's according to an email sent to AINTU by the National, or sent to nursing homes, I should say, by the National Treatment Purchase Fund in March last year. The correspondence has been released to the AINTU party under Freedom of Information, and party leader Padraig Tobin joins me now. Kate Falta, Chuck Padder. Now, what's all this about?
Well, we're seriously frustrated with the government over the last while in relation to what happened in nursing homes because, as you may know, over 2,000 people lost their lives in nursing homes, and the majority of people who died with COVID in this country died either in a nursing home or a hospital. So we have been pushing for a full investigation of it, and we've also been trying to investigate it ourselves. So we've been putting in Freedom of Information Act requests to the different elements within the HSE. And this week, the National Treatment Purchase Fund responded to us. And they showed us an email that they delivered to the nursing homes on the 12th of March 2020. And as you say yourself, it calls on nursing homes to establish capacity in the nursing homes for people coming out of hospitals. It also tells them that they need to have the ability to care for people who are coming from acute hospital settings. It tells them to facilitate short-term residents being discharged from acute hospitals. And interestingly enough, it also tells them about a pot of money that will be available to them if they take these patients out of these hospitals. And it discusses then how each facility will coordinate directly with each hospital to allow for this to happen.
And what is wrong with all of that, in your view?
If we look back in hindsight, we see that 10,000 patients were discharged from hospitals into nursing homes in the first 6 months of 2020. And that's a far higher figure than previous years. And these people obviously were in hospital because hospitals were safer places for them to be. In many ways, the government, it seems to me, were looking to get them out of the safer hospitals and cram them into nursing homes. And the danger with regards to that is, as well, at the same time, the government were telling the nursing homes not to close their doors. So if you can remember back, most nursing homes in early March closed their doors voluntarily to visitors who would, you know, normally come in to see them. But the CMO, Dr. Houlihan, actually stated that that wasn't necessary and those doors were reopened.
But that stipulation, Padraig Tobin, would it not, that policy of releasing those 10,000 plus people from hospital settings, 10,710 discharged to nursing or convalescent homes or long stay accommodation between December 2019 and June 2020, was that not about creating capacity in hospitals for urgent cases where the hospitals were on the verge of being overwhelmed?
Yep, but to a certain extent, an argument could be made with regards to that. But if we take everything in the round, so, for example, Tadhg Daly is the CEO of Nursing Home Ireland. Further FOI documents that I've seen shows that Simon Harris, the then Minister for Health, repeatedly ignored requests from the CEO of Nursing Home Ireland to meet. We also know Stephen Donnelly, who's now the Minister for Health, was the opposition spokesperson at the time, and he reveals that the HSC were, and the word he uses, were intercepted oxygen, PPE, and staff from going to nursing homes. So in other words, the HSE were gathering up all these materials, stopping them going to nursing homes. The government was ignoring and not meeting with the representatives of nursing homes. And the CEO was telling those nursing homes to open up their doors at the start of the pandemic.
And we had Tadhg Daly, I recall him making those very points on this programme. And whereas you use the word stopping, in terms of, and Tadhg Daly might have said as well, echoed that particular point on this programme, and he's with us, a regular contributor to the programme. The HSE, I'm sure, would reply, and I note, for example, Professor Killian Toomey saying there was a reality of an urgent requirement to make acute bed capacity available in the hospitals. And on that basis as well, would that not go hand in hand with the necessity to direct PPE to where it was mostly needed in the hospitals also?
Well, and this is the thing, that It was needed in the hospitals, but it was also needed in the nursing homes. And there's a major staffing problem in the nursing homes. And the Minister for Older Persons, Mary Butler, now, at the time in October, she sent an email to Paul Reid, who is the CEO of the HSE, you know, making sure that there was enough staff being provided to nursing homes. Paul Reid didn't respond to Mary Butler for a full month, and also told him that everything was fine. And also then Paul Reid sent the same thing to a man by the name of Phelan Quinn, who's the CEO of HICWA, saying everything is fine in the nursing homes. But at the same time, I was getting phone calls from nursing homes where people were literally crying, saying that they haven't got the staff supports that they needed. We know of one particular nursing home in Galway, roughly at the same time as these emails, where everybody in the nursing home got COVID except for two staff, and those two staff were left in the nursing homes. You know, they couldn't leave the nursing home because there was no replacement staff. The headlines of the newspapers were crying out because there were staff shortages, and yet these FOIs showed that the government was saying that everything was hunky dory, and it clearly wasn't hunky dory.
Well, I'm not sure they were saying I'm not sure that they've been saying it was hunky dory, but maybe they didn't indeed profile the true extent of what was happening in nursing homes, as Ty Daly has done, as you were saying, and your former party colleague in Sinn Féin, now spokesperson on health with that party, David Cullinan, is proposing a public health inquiry. I see chairperson of the Irish Association of Social Workers, Vivian Guerin, has repeatedly advised the government that social workers could not adequately support or protect nursing home residents who experience infringements of their rights. Do you support that call for a public inquiry into what went on over the last 2 years?
Absolutely. We need to have been calling for a public inquiry for well over 6 months at this stage. We believe that the nursing homes were not protected as they should have been. They weren't given the necessary supplies. Indeed, supplies and staff were taken off them. And the wrong advice was given to them. You know, you might remember Simon Harris set up the Be On Call for Ireland initiative. 75,000 people applied for that. People came home from all over the world to take part in that. And a PQ that I've received shows that only 300 people were ever employed out of that 75,000 people to go into nursing homes and hospitals. So there needs to be a full investigation into this. We need to make sure there's accountability, and we need to make sure that this does never happen again.
All right, and before you go, Padraig Tobin, what's your view on the proposed reopening of hospitality, given what we are experiencing with Delta variant now, that the surge is ahead of schedule? In fact, nearly 1,000 cases yesterday. It's expected we might pass that today, and the next 6 to 8 weeks, all agreeing, are going to be crucial, and we're going to see a tsunami of cases.
Yeah, I believe we have to be cautious and we have to be careful. There's no doubt that this is a real illness and has a serious impact on certain age cohorts. But I will say, though, that I believe we should be following the same science as the rest of Europe. And the rest of Europe have managed to be able to open up hospitality in a safe manner. Indeed, you know, in the rest of Europe, many of them have COVID passes, but they include things like antigen testing on those COVID passes. And the reason they do that is because they don't want to go down the route of having a discriminatory vaccine pass alone. And that's why we in A2 calls on the government to open up the hospitality in a safe manner, you know, with social distancing, etc., under the same science as the rest of Europe, but to eliminate discriminatory elements that they have introduced, and that is the vaccine pass.
All right, we have to be careful of everything, as half of COVID patients in the first wave, we're told, according to a UK study, had complications. Our hope this time, of course, is with a couple of million people now vaccinated and that progressing rapidly, that the impact on hospitals and indeed nursing homes, as we've been talking about there, won't be as severe this time, with the vast majority of the cohort in nursing homes now fully vaccinated. Padraig Tobin is TD for Meath West. He's also in to party leader questioning if the Department of Health instructed the National Treatment Purchase Fund to dangle money in front of nursing homes and instruct them to make way for a large surge in transfers of patients from hospitals into nursing homes, and calling for a public inquiry on that matter. Padraig Tobin, we in Kildare, we wish Meath the best of luck, I suppose, in the football on Sunday. We won't exactly wish you the best of luck. We won't wish you the best of luck in the hurling tomorrow, where we take on Meath in Parnell Park. But thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you very much. I appreciate it greatly.
All right, we'll take a break there. That's Padraig Tobin. And after the break, we're heading to the Salins or the Naas Municipal District, where we'll be speaking with the Deputy Cathaoirleach of the District Councillor Carmel Kelly.
KFM.
Kildare Today with Clem Ryan.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie.
Going to be a busy weekend indeed, and we'll be previewing all that action at around from around a quarter to 11 this morning, including going live to Royal St George's in Kent to hear from Nick Dye the latest on the golf. We might have a look in on that even before that particular time. Now, earlier this morning we mentioned that story about Jadoville, and we indeed were doing a bit of research on this yesterday, myself and Owen, in terms of what was going on here. And Ronan McCreevy in particular of the Irish Times had done a couple of very good articles on this. And just to remind you again, and because we have people in this particular listenership area who would have been at Jadoville, and of course it being the headquarters of the Defence Forces, we thought it pertinent to bring you the details. So only the commanding officer, Commandant Pat Quinlan, of those involved at the Jadoville siege in the Congo 60 years ago, has been recommended for a medal for gallantry. An independent review group set up last year has decided that Colonel Quinlan, the commanding officer of A Company 35th Battalion, should receive the Distinguished Service Medal, known as the DSM, for gallantry. However, the group, chaired by retired Brigadier General Paul Pakenham, has recommended that the 33 men from A Company's 35th Battalion should not be awarded the medal, as Colonel Quinlan had recommended after the siege, which occurred in September 1961. Colonel Quinlan also recommended that of the 33, five of them should be awarded the Military Medal for Gallantry, the Irish Army's highest award. However, the review group concluded that the award of DSM and MMG medals would devalue what's called another medal, Unbound Jadoville, or the Jadoville Medal, which was given in 2017 to all veterans of the siege. To remind you again, of course, that the Congo in the early 1960s was to the forefront of all our consciousness here in this country, because more than 5,000 Irish soldiers served in the country. 26 of them were killed during those years, including 9 who were killed during the Niemba ambush on November 8, 1966. And among those killed was Sergeant Hugh Gaynor of Leixlip. We spoke to his family on this programme in the past, and of course Lieutenant Kevin Gleeson of County Carlow was also the leader of the platoon of that particular ambush. But we're talking about a separate battle that occurred at Jadoville. 158 men from A Company faced a force of Katanganese rebels backed up by French and Belgian mercenaries at a place called Jadoville. And Colonel Quinlan made the Irish contingent dig trenches in the sweltering African heat. When UN troops eventually broke their peacekeeping mandate and attacked Katanga, which wanted to break away from the Congo, the rebels in Katanga decided that the Irish UN troops would be a target. Shelling began on September 13th, 1961. The Irish fought heroically. After 5 days, the enemy requested a ceasefire. Now, a number of those Irish soldiers, by the way, were only 16, 17, 18 years of age. And they played a huge part. In particular, one of them, a 17-year-old, Matt Tighe, played a huge part and was recommended for the highest award of bravery by Colonel Quinlan. This committee has decided not to do that now. A Company estimated that they killed over 300 rebel fighters, and that force was over 3,000 against the Irish men. However, A company did surrender after a number of days. Many of them were prisoners of war for 6 to 8 weeks before becoming home. However, when they came home, they were treated appallingly. They were treated, in many cases, as being cowards, people who didn't know what happened. And the dreaded nickname of derision, Jadoville Jack, came to be attached to the men of A Company as men who gave up in battle. This at all did not reflect the bravery of this contingent. And it had a very unfortunate legacy as well, because some of these veterans were victims of suicide, alcoholism and post-traumatic stress syndrome. At least six of those soldiers took their own lives in the years afterwards, and that is well chronicled across a number of articles as well. Various soldiers, some of them went abroad, unfortunately ended up taking their own life there. I won't go into the details. Others ended up in psychiatric hospitals, etc. So this announcement that came yesterday will be a severe blow, no doubt, to those who have been campaigning over the years for the Defence Forces to overturn its original decision not to award medals. In the past, we've spoken on this programme to Declan Power. We've spoken to Leo Quinlan himself. He was an officer in the Irish Army. He's the son of Commandant Pat Quinlan. And we've spoken to other Jadoville veterans as well, who still carry on a campaign for proper recognition of these men. A military medals board will be established to consider the recommendations that were announced yesterday, and it will make a report to the Chief of Staff by the end of August. A recommendation does not necessarily mean that a medal will be awarded. So that story is going to go on and on and on. And by the way, we have a new Chief of Staff as well, who will be appointed very shortly as well. Because Vice Admiral Mark Mellett has announced that he will be stepping down from the position. He's a Navy officer, and for the first time in Irish Defence Forces history, a member of the Air Corps will become the Chief of Staff. We'll tell you about him maybe in a couple of minutes' time. But let's go to Owen.
Yeah, exactly, Clem. And just to pick up on that point as well, the government accepting the recommendation of the Minister for Defence, Simon Coveney, to nominate Major General Sean Clancy for the appointment by the President as the Chief of Staff for the Defence Forces. That announcement was made earlier on in the week.
Yeah, he's highly qualified, has had very, very senior commanding positions at the Air Corps in Baldonnell, and has all sorts of leadership qualifications and so on. A comparatively young man to be appointed Chief of Staff. Mm. So possibly in the future we'll get him on the programme to have a chat. Yeah, congratulations to him, and best wishes indeed.
And Vice Admiral Mark Mellett as well. He has over 40 years service as an officer in the Irish Defence Forces, and he was the first naval officer in the Irish state to serve as the Chief of Staff as well. And he's done a good job as well. And right, of course we saw him over at a recent launch a couple of years ago over at Killashee, so no doubt we'll follow up on that as the weeks go by. But turning our attentions to local issues, and Fianna Fáil councillor on the NACE MD, Carmel Kelly, joins me on the programme. Carmel, good morning. Agus Fáilteas Jock.
And can I add my congratulations to Sean Clancy? I actually know Sean, and so I was thrilled when I heard the announcement that he was going to be the next Chief of Staff. So publicly add my congratulations to Sean, and looking forward to his stewardship. Mind you, Jadoville, not the finest hour of the Defence Forces, but anyway, I think that is a long way to run, yes. Good morning anyway, Owen. How are you?
Good morning. Not too bad. Listen, let's take
Happy
a look.
Happy Friday.
You too. Looking at the motions that you brought forward then to the recent meeting, first of all, you were asking the council to include the following estates in the list of estates where they'll be applying Jake's Law. And these are all in Sallins: Osbertown Court Drive and Park, Sallins Wharf and Pier in Sallins.
Yeah, it was more a pleading for them to be included in Jake's Law. Jake's Law, we hope, will be implemented before the end of the year, whereby all estates that are taken in charge by Kildare County Council will have signage to say, please drive 30 kilometres is the most you can drive in an estate. There'll be signage included, and anything that is required to remind people to take care when they're driving estates. This will be a good day when this happens, because up to this, estates used to have to apply for it. and not every estate knew about it. But now this is going to be implemented across the board. But unfortunately, it's estates taken in charge by Kildare County Council. And those estates that you listed in Salins are not taken in charge. Now, these estates are, I think, Osbertown Park. 25 years, at least. It's 25 years old, and it hasn't been taken in charge. Now, look, there's a whole load of issues. I got a complex report. It's all to do with Irish Water and the pumping station at Osbertown. And it's gone on for years, and it'll be gone on for many years to come. But I was saying, please find some exemption, anything that is possible to bring Jake's Law, to ensure that Jake's Law is rolled out to these estates, because there's a lot of children living in these estates, and we're actually at the stage where it's almost the grandchildren of the people who originally moved into that estate, and like, they're being punished for something that is not of their own making. So why are they being left out? So I'm just saying, think about it, some exemption, even if it was just putting up the signs. I don't know what it is, but I'm asking them to look into it, please, before the end of the year, because there's no way in hell these estates are going to be taken in charge for another couple of years, no matter how much we try. As I said, it looks like they're going to have to build a new extension to the pumping station. That's long term. So short term, find me something, please, that allows them to be included in Jake's Law.
Okay, you also had a motion brought forward, and I know this is an issue that many listeners have gone in touch with us about, and it's a bugbear of a lot of people as well. You were asking the council to investigate the provision of dog litter bins in this municipal district. I don't think a month is going to go by where the issue of dog fouling is not going to come up at a council meeting.
Oh, not at all. And I mean, if COVID has showed us one thing, is that, you know, we love our dogs. I mean, there isn't a household that doesn't have a dog. I think the ownership of dogs has skyrocketed, and you can see it. People are out walking their dog all of the time, because there are most people are working from home still, so they can be out walking the dogs. And I know the council have a, you know, any bin, any bag, but I noted in some of the other councils, and I did give them the background, that they're rolling out an initiative of specific dog poop bins. And all I was asking is that the council, you know, follow the progress of these other councils that are already rolling them out. See how they work, if they don't work. Like, there's no need to invent the wheel. I was just asking them to investigate. But as you know, if you were there, there was nobody from Environment to answer my question, and I was a bit put out by that. So I kind of went off on a rant. But look, I've had good news since. Not particularly on the bins, per se, but I have been informed by Kildare County Council that they're starting a dog fouling awareness campaign this coming Monday, which I was thrilled to hear about. And for those in the Naas area, this Monday morning in Monry Park, there's going to be a few of the wardens out there. They're going to be giving out those clips for the dog poop bag, so that you could clip onto your the lead of the dog. But also they're going to be installing an audio warning device. So it's a motion sensor. So as you're walking past with your dog, it'll be just a reminder, you know, clean up after your dog. Have you got a bag? Bin your poop. That sort of thing. So I'm thrilled that they're being proactive and trialling this.
Well, Carmel, just very quickly then on that same issue, because I know a lot of people have got in touch with us about this as well, is that the lack of dog poo bags in Monreed Park, where they were going up to the bag dispensers and they were constantly empty. Do you know if they've been refilled yet?
Actually, that's a good question. I don't know, but there was an issue for a couple of weeks post-Brexit that the bags that they were, the original bags that the council had a contract, the people who supplied the bags could no longer supply them at the price that they had. Okay. So they were having to go off and source a new supplier. But actually, I don't know the answer to that question. So do you know what? I will find out and I will text you later, and you can let the listeners know, have they been resupplied?
Okay, great stuff. And then finally, Carmel, you had a question asking the council to confirm how many local residence groups in the municipal district have been assisted with providing composting facilities within their estates.
Yeah, and look, I understand, again, it's an issue. I mean, a lot of estates are they're just so good at cleaning up and doing all of making their estates look wonderful. And the Pride of Place competition actually has just started for any estate that wants to check on Kildare County Council's website. The Pride of Place competition is just starting up, and so many estates have so much pride in their estate, but the council no longer collect green waste. Or, to, you know, there was a time when you bagged up your green waste, you got the bags from the council, you bagged them up in a particular green bag, and the council would come along and collect them. They no longer do that. So what do these estates do? They can install a composter in their estate, but finding a spot in the estate is the problem, you know. So I wanted to know, I know the council, I knew the Environment Department, would come along and assist and give advice and any help with estates, but it looks like not a lot of estates have taken up the challenge, and it is a challenge.
Okay.
Because, as I said, trying to find a spot within your estate. Now, as I was told, in the county development plan, there is a proposal that all new housing develops should include a designated green waste composting area, and I'm thrilled with that. So from now on, any new applications for housing developments, there has to be a space left for composting the green waste. But that doesn't help with any of the older estates. So I think over the summer I'm going to go... get it out there on social media and talk to estates that are having issues with that, and maybe put them in touch with Dara Wire in the environment section and see if we can't come up with some solution. Because, as I said, so many estates, you know, want their estates looking well, and the residents go out of their way. They go up and, you know, above the duty to do it. So don't want them to stop doing that.
Okay.
But it is difficult.
Fianna Fáil councillor on the NICE MD, Carmel Kelly. Thanks for joining us this morning, Carmel. Good morning to you.
Thanks, Owen. Thank you, Carmel, with that. Did you know, by the way, today is a very significant date? Well, if you're of a particular age, you will remember all of this, because the crew of Apollo 11 blasted off from Cape Kennedy on this day with the hope of being the first humans to walk on the moon. When did it happen? Apollo 11, with its three-man crew of Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and Michael Collins, lifted off at 2:32 p.m. Irish time on this day, 16th of July 1969. The spacecraft that would land the first men on the moon was launched from what was called the Kennedy Space Center in Florida. Millions of people around the world listened in on radio and watched on television as the countdown to launch took place, and the three spacemen were blasted off from Earth, their mission to land on the moon. At Cape Kennedy, 30,000 people gathered to watch the launch. Now, if you're of a particular age, you'll remember how people watched that with awe, and particularly in the next day or so, watched with huge amazement at the miracle that was taking place as the moon lander headed into the moon. The broadcasts of all of that took place around that particular day, and we all remembered, or some people will remember, looking at the television and wondering, will they crash when they land on the moon, or what will happen? Michael Collins, of course, the man with the famous Irish name, famously became the first man in human history to be totally alone, in that he orbited the other side of the moon, while Neil Armstrong and Buzz Aldrin became the first and second man, respectively, on to land on the moon.
Yeah, I have a piece of audio here, Clem, if you want to play it from NASA, just talking about it. It's 2 minutes long, and it kind of encapsulates what you're saying, where people watched it on television. So just have a listen to this.
Roger. And we're getting a picture on the TV. Okay, Neil, we can see you coming down the ladder now.
We could see it as it was happening. We could watch on live television.
That's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
And the fact that 600 million people around the world were either watching or listening on radio and TV as it happened is a measure of the impact that this thing had on the world's consciousness.
The surface, as we said, was fine grained with lots of rocks in it. It took footprints very well, and the footprints stayed in place. The limb was in good shape, and exhibited no damage from the landing or the descent. It's a picture of the ladder with the well-known plaque.
Here, man, from the planet Earth, first set foot upon the moon, July 1969, AD. It came in peace for all mankind.
After the flight of Apollo 11, Neil Armstrong, Buzz Aldrin and I had an around-the-world tour, and every place we went, I thought they'd, in some places, have the attitude of, oh, well, you Americans finally did this. Not at all. The attitude, every country, regardless of their internal politics, they all said, we did it, we humans.
Everything before July 20th, 1969, humans only had experience on one planetary body. From that moment on, we were, at least in some measure, a multiplanetary species.
When Neil and Buzz walked on the moon, they did it, of course, without weapons. The only thing they brought was cameras. So it was a peaceful enterprise and one that was applauded worldwide.
What an amazing piece. That was 4 days after the launch. The launch took place on this day, 2:32 p.m. Irish time, July 16th, 1969. I love those quotes from Neil Armstrong where he said, you know, we came in peace for all mankind. And one small step for man, one giant step for mankind.